Okay, so it's Thursday night, Parshas Erev Shabbos, Parshas Tetzaveh, which of course primarily speaks about clothing, right? The big day Kodesh of Aaron and his children. So I was thinking about different questions for tonight's shira. I found myself going more towards the clothing aspect, and then somebody threw me a very, very excited question, so I decided to include my approach to that one as well. We'll see which ones you are interested in exploring tonight. Question number one, it's Purim time. It's not exactly Purim time, but we're within striking distance, and I'm now considering costumes. I really enjoyed my trip to Scotland, and I even bought a Scottish kilt. I obviously plan on wearing it on Purim. We tend to daven at my family's Purim Suda. Is there a problem davening in a kilt? What if I'm wearing a shetel, and I'm a man? Can I daven for the Yomid in that costume? That's question number one. Question number two, the new latest craze is the Bar Mitzvah Boy Kippah. I see all of the different logos and wanted to respond with a logo of my own. A yarmulke with a pasuk on it. V'yareisa me'elokecha. Because after all, it's not the Lego, the Ferrari, the Amazon, or the New York Rangers that's the point of the yarmulke. The whole point of the yarmulke is v'yareisa me'elokecha. So I told my Bar Mitzvah aged son about this idea. And he told me that if I did that, A, he'd be personally mortified. And he also told me, by the way, you should just know that that yarmulke is not going to sell because it can't be worn in the bathroom. It had a pasuk on it. And so that got me thinking, is my son right? Can someone put Hebrew psukim on a yarmulke and wear it into the bathroom? And what if it's not full psukim? What if it's only Hebrew letters? And that's question number two. So we have the kilt for Purim, we have the shetel and the yamin, right? We have the yarmulke, right? And then we have this one's for some of us in the room. I grew up in a community where it seems that the focus on the hat you wore was more important than the head that filled the hat. I even remember identifying with the group Black Hatitude. Remember Black Hatitude? Okay, is there any significance to a black hat religiously? And does it have any more kedusha than, say, a yarmulke? And that's question number three. I guess some of the people who write me are a little bit edgy. And here, I got an email. This last one is a little bit out of the box. I got an email this week with the following subject line. Ad Kan. Right? Question mark. Ad Kan. And it was a link to a news story that appeared on one of the Jewish websites this week concerning a case that involved a couple. As the person said to me, we're living in extraordinary times where things don't seem to appear the way that they should. Earlier today, and this was on Tuesday, I was reading about a transgender divorce case where the former husband refused to give a get because he argued that he's no longer a husband, but rather a wife. Have you ever heard such a crazy thing? What happens to the child of somebody who transfers from being his father to a female? How does he get called up to the Torah? What gets written in his ksuba? How do we work out those types of situations? So we have the transgender get, Shaila. We have the black attitude. We have the yarmulke with the psukim. And we have the kilt. What should we cover first?
The first.
You're interested in the kilt. Okay. Anyone else? Okay, we'll start with the kilt. What goes into the question?
Klisha.
Huh? Okay, so question number one we have to ask is if it's a klisha. There's a pasuk in Parshas Ki Tzetzeh, which is very, very clear. That, by the way, underlies also some of the issues concerning the fourth question, if we go there also, right? The Torah tells us, lo yekli gever alisha velo yobash gever simlat isha, that a man is not allowed to wear the clothing of a female, right? And a woman is not supposed to wear the clothing of a male. Rashi identifies in the right there in the pasuk, and I believe he's quoting a Gemara in Nazir, if I'm not mistaken, where Rashi says that that doesn't only limit itself to the clothing, right? It goes beyond. Men and women are supposed to be distinct, and they're supposed to live in distinct ways. And when we do things that are going to lead to all sorts of mixing in an inappropriate way, right? it confuses people and it needs to be separated. And this is the logic behind the Torah's prohibition. So there are certain instances where poskim, by definition, the Rama, for instance, in Hilchos Purim, points out that that there was such an old minhag that men and women would change dresses and change outfits, right, on Purim. And on Purim itself, it's not a problem. There are others who point out the same thing at weddings. Sometimes you go to a wedding and you see that, you know, in the context of the Simchas Chasam V'Kala, right, that people put on costumes. I don't get half the costumes that people wear at weddings. Half the time, I don't think the people who are wearing them are alert enough, you know, to either be able to drive a car or to explain why they're wearing the costumes that they're wearing. But whatever the case is, there is a concept of Simchas Chasam V'Kala. I will also add that there is a concept that Rashi identifies in the other context as well. That is to say, I think sometimes a lot of these costumes lead to inappropriate mixing. A person has to be careful in those situations. But so, as far as Kli Gever and Simlati Shah is concerned, that is a consideration that has to come into play. But look at our question. Our question began with a very distinct type of outfit. The person is not stepping up to the Amud fully dressed as a female. The Shetel question comes into play over there. And that's why I added it in, right? If a man is dressed up as a full-fledged woman and it goes up to the Amud, that might present a little bit more of a difficulty. But in the first question, the guy's wearing a kilt. And in Scotland,
it's not feminine.
Quite the opposite. It's quite masculine. Does that make a difference or not? So we'll hold that, your point. We have to fit that one in over there. Of course, in the United States, even a Scottish kilt is identified as a Beis Yaakov skirt. They're literally the same, right? The Beis Yaakov skirt is a plaid, and the Scottish kilt is a plaid.
Firefighters wear them when they parade down.
Huh?
The firefighters wear them when they
Right, parade. So we have the bagpipers, right, that wear them, right? And we have the Beis Yaakov girls from certain schools when they're walking around in the street with holding their books like this, right? Very often, depending on which school they come from, they're wearing the same plaid over there. So the halacha is that when something is not uniquely identified as belonging to one gender, right, but rather it's something that could be considered unisex, there is no problem with Kli Gever or Simlas Isha with that. So something to keep in mind, something to hold on to. But here, certainly the man wearing the Scottish kilt in Scotland is certainly not going to have a problem, or so we might assume. Simply on the basis of Simlat Isha, yes, there is no problem. Are there any other factors to consider?
He has to wear a belt.
Why?
Well, if he's going
to
be
well, well before that, why does he have to wear a belt if he's at the Amid as opposed to anywhere else?
It wasn't a shirt there, but...
Why?
You say dog creation,
ma. Oh, so now Yossi's starting to tick into some of the other issues. How, you know, in girls' schools, so very often, what's the number one topic that gets discussed in high schools? What's the number one thing? Right? All of a sudden, Sinus is like, there are three mitzvahs in the Torah, right? In a girls' high school, according to the girls, they tell me, oh my gosh, Sinus is like, before Avodah Zarah, there's Tznius, and then after that comes all the other mitzvahs, because that's the way it seems to some of them. And Tznius is an important concept, and it's not only about, it's not limited to just girls' schools. Hatznei Alach Hashem Elokecha, the idea of walking humbly with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is something that applies to all of us. And we all have a responsibility not to be ostentatious. Rabbi Shechter always used to tell us, whenever he would bring this up, he would always make sure to remind us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a Kel Mestat there. God is a God who doesn't like hang out there in the open, right? He wants us to be similar. We're not supposed to be so ostentatious and showy and everything else. That's also part of Tznius. So when you go eat a $1,000 dinner, right, at one of the local restaurants, not in Elizabeth, in a different neighborhood, right? So that's also a violation of the laws of Tznius. If you have a house that is, 16 blocks long, right? That's also a little bit ostentatious. That's also raises questions of Tznius. So here also, Tznius comes into play a little bit, you know, for all of us. There are certain rules that come into play for all of us when it comes to Tznius. And one of the issues is, when a person gets up to daven, he has to make sure that he's dressed appropriately. First and foremost is the concept of the fact that he has to make sure, like Yossi said before, Ein libo roes ha'erva, right? that a person has to be careful not to be dressed in such a way whereby his or her heart, so to speak, would see the lower region of the body, the sexual organs of the body. And so therefore, by definition, some go a little bit further, and they're particular to wear a special garment, some sort of belt, that would make that differentiation between the heart and the place of erva. Any of us, as is described in the Shulchan Aruch in Siman Tzadi, so as part of the preparatory processes for tefillah, some of us wear belts, or as one of my rabbis in high school used to say, I have elastic on my underwear. All of these things serve the same purpose, which is to make this separation. So maybe a person who's wearing a Scottish kilt may come to a problem of some of the issues of tznius. So Yossi says, so you have to wear a belt. Fine, let's say he puts on a belt. Is he still okay? Now all of a sudden, can daven for the Amud? Huh? Well, can a person daven for the Amud in shorts? Can you wear shorts? Short pants? Can I serve as chazan? Can I do that? Right? So here already we get into an exciting discussion. Right? The Mechaber in Shulchan Aruch, in Siman and Gimel, Sif, Yud Gimel, and Yud Dalet, makes it very clear that a pocheach, he quotes a Gemara in Shabbos, a person can't go ahead, a pocheach cannot lead the services. What's a pocheach? So the Gemara Megillah seems to describe a pocheach, Chavdal and Amad Aleph, a pocheach is a person who has tattered clothing. Right? So the person who has tattered clothing should not come up to daven for the Amud. The Rambam in Hilchos Tefillah, Perakei Halacha Bet, he says that as a person can stand up for tefillah with legs that are revealed, right? Why? Because that's not the way people go ahead and stand before kings. Of course, that would imply that if it was the style to stand that way in front of kings, then a person would be allowed to go ahead and stand that way. This leads Rav Ovadia Yosef to come to the conclusion that if a person is davening in shorts, such a person cannot represent the tzibur. That is to say, he cannot serve as a shaliach tzibur. He can't be a chazan. And also cannot receive an aliyah, because the person who's getting the aliyah, contrary to popular belief, he is not getting an aliyah for himself. He is taking an opportunity to do what? To represent the tzibur in the process. And so if we assume that that is true for shorts, that may be the problem that comes up with a kilt as well. Most kilts don't come down as long as a Beis Yaakov skirt, right? And so as a result, that too might be a problem. What if I'm wearing an extra long kilt, right? I get it, very strong, comes down past the knees, so it's not a question of pocheach, right? Which is not the style necessarily in Scotland, but you know, some of those guys with the bagpipes, they wear the long, you know, they're wearing quite long skirts. Now, it's Purim. Can he daven for the Amud? The rules of Pocheach, yes. Right? The rules of Libo Roes Ha'erva, certainly. It's tapered at the top. So now it's all okay? Everyone says yes, you can wear the... I have a third problem over here. Once upon a time, we talked about something called happy socks. There was a shaila that was raised in Israel by a very dear friend of mine who's been here before, Rabbi Leibowitz. Right? So he got very excited. Apparently there's something called happy socks. You know what happy socks are? People who wear socks that have like all sorts of happy faces on them, smiley faces, sometimes they have like funny things on them. So in Israel, Kohanim go up to the Duchen every day. Right? And so Rabbi Leibowitz says, can you go and Duchen? He says, if you're wearing happy socks, I mean, what's going to happen? Well, what's the first rule? Rabbi Shachta always says to me, this is one of his favorites. Hey, Rabbi Shachta used to always look at us and say to us, I was asked constantly to offer the most important halacha that I want to offer about Chag HaPesach. And he always says the same thing, Chag HaPesach and Chag HaSukkos. He says the same thing. What's the most important thing to make sure that everybody knows? When the Kohanim go up to the Duchen, do not turn around and face the other way. When somebody gives you a bracha, do what? Face them. So why does everyone turn away? Not everyone. The people who don't know. It was so funny. I had this conversation with my son, right? Because what happened? They come into shul, right? They go under your talis. They, you know, There was one year, I think it was Yom Kippur this year, so I was davening for the Yomit. So my younger son came in to my older son, and my older son decided he's going to go ahead and put them both under the talus. So afterwards, he looks at me and he says, I don't know, I was facing the people. I had the talus over my head. I was facing the Kohanim. Is that okay? So I said to him, Tatala, you need to understand, not only it's okay, that's what you're supposed to do. He says, no. Everybody knows you look down and away. I said, everybody knows you look down and away. Wrong. You're supposed to face the Kohanim. Whoever heard that when somebody gives you a bracha, you're busy looking this way? That's ridiculous. And Rabbi Shechter used to drill this into us year and year and year and year. Right? Every single year, either before Sukkot or before Pesach, another point in time, make sure you tell everybody you know you face the Kohanim.
You look at them?
You face them. We look down. That's our minhag. But by the way, if you look at them, it's a lot less worse than if you turn around and literally face the wrong way. Right? We're not supposed to sit there and go like this and gaze. Right? So here's the question. Why do people turn away? Because they know the halacha. You don't stare at a person. It's not respectful. Someone gives you a bracha. You come with a certain sense of humility. So you look down. So we're always worried that someone's going to get distracted. So the halacha is if somebody has a major physical blemish, right, where people are going to, they're going to stare. So such a person shouldn't go up to the duchen. Asks Rabbi Leibowitz, and what if he's wearing funky socks? And now what's going to happen?
You're looking down.
People are going to stare at his feet, though. They're going to stare. They stare this way. They're going to stare this way. What's the difference? Hey, psst, check out Joe's socks. Right? Actually, who's my favorite Cohen? Murray Cohen. We all sing about him. Right? Check out Murray's socks. Right? Holy cow, they're smiling back at you. Look at him wiggle his toes. They're smiling back at you. So he asked this Shiloh all over the place. And I happen to see Rabbi Zilberstein's response to him. And Rabbi Zilberstein from Israel responds. He says, I've never heard of these happy socks, but if they're a common thing in the community, right, then we don't have to worry in such a situation. But if it's going to be a distraction, then the halacha is we have to be concerned. Happy socks is not a distraction. Certainly not in North Woodmere, where Rabbi Leibowitz is. I don't think happy socks would be much of a distraction in our shul as well, right, in the United States. If you're in a Hasidic community, and you're the guy who comes out as the chassid in the yellow socks, Yitzchak Muli has a whole thing. It happens to be the piece I remember the most of his artwork, and it happens to be a beautiful piece. But if all the other Kohanim come up to the duchen and they're all in black socks, and you have these, you know, huge smiley emoji socks that are bright yellow, yeah, maybe over there the 6,000 people who are packed into the Hasidish shtibul to go look, they're going to be like, whoa, look at those socks, right? In that situation would be a problem. So taking that and translating it over here, the distractions that exist over there by Birkas Kohanim could also be a very major problem over here for the person leading the services. And so I think that the answer over here comes down to the understanding that, yeah, it is a distraction. And so therefore, the guy in the kilt should probably not daven for the Yamad on Purim. Right? But if it's not going to be...
Is the same thing as a Kohen going into the...
So it sounds like there are those who argue maybe it's not the exact same thing. Rav Ovadia Yosef's son, the current chief rabbi of Israel, Rav Yitzchak Yosef and Yalkut Yosef suggest that, in his opinion, one perhaps should not. But it's all irrelevant. You know why? Because this story happened here.
You said it's common for happy socks, right?
So right.
Form, it's common that everyone's in costume. So what's the difference?
So the question is in addition, right? So Simchas Torah morning, somebody showed up in shul here and had the responsibility to lead Psukei Dezimra. And he was wearing a kilt, a Scottish kilt. And he went over to Rabbi Teitz. And Rabbi Teitz said to him, I'm not going to tell a Teitz kilt joke. I'm holding back. Right? Rabbi Teitz said to him, he says, what do you think? He says, it's very much you. He says, so I can daven for the Yamid? He said, no. He says, you can daven for the Yamid as soon as you put your pants on. Right? And so I guess Rabbi Teitz paskened very clearly that he felt it was much of a distraction. I also, if I remember correctly, the kilt also came above his knees. So he was worried anyway. Generally, if you're in Scotland, you can certainly wear a kilt for the daven for the Yamid. A person also has to remember, and this is just an important thing to focus in general when we think about tefillah. You know, tefillah is very important. It is an important process. And things that distract us from being able to have kavanah, even on Purim, is a problem. It's like I remember growing up, there was one guy who was a beautiful Baal Tefillah. He was a terrific guy. On Purim, when he used to daven mincha for the Yamad, so he would all of a sudden go into his olden roots and he would daven with a perfect Hasidish bent, right? With the umayin and everything, and he would scream it out loud. And he did it, I think, for the enjoyment, not because, not because that's the way he felt one should daven. I always felt that was a little bit odd. Not, you know, in the shul that we grew up in, which was a little bit more, correct in its pronunciation, a little bit more, stylistically appropriate, I think that's strange. I think it's the same thing as having somebody go into a Hasidic shtibul on Simcha, on Purim, and daven with a perfect mora, right? Even we're inappropriate. And I think that's also inappropriate. I think it's distracting to the people around. It's not the right time. There's a time and a place. Before, after, right? Not during. So a little bit less, focus helps everyone daven. Purim is an incredible day. It's an Eis Ratzon. It's a serious Eis Ratzon. In fact, the Mishnah Berurah says, a person who doesn't usually do so should daven seek out Purim if he can. Why? It's a great time. It's an Eis Ratzon. Let a person go ahead and step up to the plate. We try very hard on those things, but something to think about. Still, don't kill the costume. Don't say it's totally usher all the time. The question over here is at the yarmulke. Okay, so that's question number one. Then we have the question about the bar mitzvah boy's yarmulke. Huh? So there. Let me read you a piece as far as the stuff is concerned. Listen to a comment from Rav Vosner. Right? Rav Vosner disagrees with what I just said to a certain degree. And I think that's where he makes a differentiation with the sheitel between the sheitel and the kilt. And here's Rav Vosner's comment. It appears in Shevet Alevi Chelek Yud Simen Yun Ches. And he says as follows. Asher Sho'al, you asked the question. Be'inyan Asher Harbeinu Agen B'Tachposet B'Purim. A lot of people wear costumes on Purim. I guess that was like wild and crazy for a Vosner in Bnei Brak, right? A yeshivish guy put on a shtreimel. A chassidish guy put on a black hat, right? So, the question, can you go ahead and daven that way? It's not what you're wearing on the outside. Yeah, it's how are you standing in front of God, right? Provided that you are properly attired, you're properly covered over, and you are not inebriated to the point where you're not able to daven appropriately. Vein oses shum schok. He's not engaging in frivolity. Say nafkamina beiza begin omeid. It doesn't matter if you want to wear a shtreimel or if you want to wear a costume. You can daven in your costume. The guy wants to come in the cowboy hat, the policeman's uniform. That's not the bigger issue over here. So you see, Rav Vosner, who you would expect to be more machmir than Schwartz, right? Actually, he has a little bit more leniency. However, you see what he says. It can't be schok. It can't be a costume that's like inappropriate. And he has to be covered. So if you're wearing a costume of, what do they call it? Like, what do they call it? A fat suit, right? Where it looks like a human being, but it's expanded and it is anatomically correct. I think a person can go to, he's perfectly covered. I don't think that he's allowed to daven for the yamid like that, even though I think even Rav Vosner would agree in that situation, right? Because it's not the way you stand in front of Anashim Chashuvin. But, I think that a person who, is dressed appropriately, and covered appropriately, such a person can go to the yamid. I did, as I said before, I think, if you totally look like a female and you're going up to the yamid, that's going to be a little too confusing. And I don't think that that's appropriate. I think that that's one of the klieger issues that you mentioned before. That this is the basis that there shouldn't be so much schok, right? And so therefore, I think that Rav Vosner would discourage that particular style of costume. Okay?
And that answer covers your third question, which it doesn't matter, except if you wear a shtreimel, a black hat, or a yarmulke, as long as you're davening.
So you want me to...
I didn't say that there are three. I'm saying that
three is actually a relatively short question, right? The third question was about the black hat. Is there any more significance to a black hat than a yarmulke, right? That was the base of the question. I grew up in a community where it seems that the focus of the hat you wore was more important than the head that filled it. I even remember identifying with the group Black Hatitude. Is there more significance to a black hat religiously? Does it have any more kedusha than, say, a yarmulke? Now, I know this is a politically charged question. I'm not interested in politics. Can anyone offer their perspective? Yes, no, and why?
What?
Go ahead.
I know there's something to a double covering.
Okay. But that's not about the hat. That's about Hikon Lekras Elokecha Yisrael. Very good. There is an idea that's mentioned which exists that when a person prepares for tefillah, they should prepare extra. They should put on some sort of garment because I'm preparing myself to stand in front of Hashem. That may come into play in our question. Right? It may not. We'll see. But yes, hold that particular point. That's not about the hat per se, but it is about a hat or some sort of additional covering.
During tefillah?
Huh?
During tefillah or in general?
Oh, so Yossi says, am I talking about tefillah or in general? That is exactly the basis of the question. Because I can't, ironically, after I finished the yarmulke question, that's when I said, oh, I'll include this one too, because it's like a play one off the other.
Although,
right?
I think if you're dying in then if you're medayik it out, like you're medayik in sota, then there should be enough gemil between tefillah and walking around.
What do you mean?
In sota, you say the paras rosh ha'isha, right?
Right.
It means that her hair is covered. So he says you should wear a kovel gadol to wash your loshim b'shuk. So that means not only shouldn't you be wearing it during shul, you should be wearing it when you're on the street too.
Oh, so actually, ironically, when I was conceptualizing this question, I had the exact opposite thought. Literally the exact opposite, and I'll show you why. Right? The funniest thing is, I believe that when we turn the black hat into a political statement, it lost any sort of additional significance, precisely for that which you brought up before, which you bring out, which you set aside. Let me ask you a question. And it's funny, as I was thinking about it, I realized how silly, growing up, we've carried ourselves. A yarmulke. Right? Take a yarmulke. Take the one... Yudi's wearing a yarmulke right now. Let's say, after a while, that yarmulke rubs out. And Yudi decides it's time to get another yarmulke. Right? So the yarmulke that he's wearing right now, does it have to go into Shemus?
No.
Right? Now, does he even have to be careful about wrapping it up before putting it in, you know, in the garbage? So, like, let's say, for instance, as opposed to... we were cleaning up the coat rack this week. So someone came over to me and he says to me, I found the esrog. I said, the esrog? He says, yeah, I checked it. It was an esrog from last year. Right? Just so you know, he found it tucked in. Somebody brought it to shul, because that's what you do with your leftover mitzvah stuff, apparently according to some unidentified person. And you leave it in the coat rack till the rabbi checks on Erev Pesach, right? And at that point in time, it mysteriously disappears. So this guy takes the esrog out and he says to me, what do I do with it? So what do you do with your esrog? I know everyone saves their lulav and they throw it into the fire, right? And the basis for that, there is a basis for that. Why do we use our lulavim as part of the fire, right? I use something for a mitzvah, right? If I'm going to get rid of it, I should use it to get rid of it, also doing a mitzvah. That's where the concept of taking the lulav and putting it inside the fire came from. What do you do with your esrog when you're done with it? You make jelly, right? Tu b'shvat, right? Yeah, that's where the minhag of eating the esrog on Tu b'shvat came from. You give it to someone who's 9 months pregnant, who's trying to have their child, because there's apparently a segula somewhere. I'm not a big segula person. I know the segula to having depth in learning is learning, and the best segula for getting married is going out on dates. That's what I heard, right? But some people say that, you know, for whatever reason, and I'm not an expert in these things, if you give a woman an esrog to bite when she's in her ninth month, so that'll help to a certain degree. I don't know where that came from. I'm not an expert. I plead ignorance, right? But here this person left this esrog. I certainly wasn't feeding it to anybody who's expecting. It's already Adar. It's probably been sitting and tucked in this little corner since who knows when, probably since the end of Sukkot. I don't know where it's been or what's touched it, right? That's not where it's supposed to go. What do I do with the Esrog? Huh? It's not a Shemitah Esrog. Excellent question. If it were a Shemitah Esrog, I have responsibility to send it back to Israel, right? With Rabbi Teitz. Huh? Unless it gets to the point where it's totally shriveled, in which case I put it off to the side. We'll deal with that in Mitzvah Hashem next year when we're all sitting in Eretz Yisrael, because this coming year will be Shemitah year. We have a lot of excitement coming up when Shemitah happens. Always a good year for the rabbis because there's a lot more extra things to talk about. Never a leap year during a Shemitah year. That if HaKadosh Baruch Hu is very careful with us, make sure not to add an extra month where there's no planting. But yes, something to pay attention to. Okay, so what do you do with it? So what we did was we took it, we put it in its own box, and then we put it together with the rest of the trash. Why? Because it has what we call the status of a tashmish mitzvah. We used this as a part of a mitzvah. Not as part of, not, it's not like a tefillin or a sefer Torah or a mezuzah, where those things have the status of tashmish kedusha, where something that it was used but has inherent it was used together with something that has inherent kedusha. So those boxes from the tefillin, not the batim themselves, even the plastic boxes, right? When they go bad, what do you have to do with them? We bury those, right? We have to bury those. They have kedusha to them. I actually have a bag sitting on my desk. Somebody said, "Hey, Rabbi, I changed my boxes. Can you figure out what to do with this?" Great. So now I have extra Seamus sitting on my desk. Right? And I'm supposed to remember that when somebody passes away, to take it to the cemetery, which of course I haven't done, probably longer than that Esrog was sitting in the cubbyhole. So a Tashmish Kedusha needs Geniza, right? Which means it needs to be buried. That's the right thing to do with it. But something that's used for a mitzvah, right? In the process of performing a mitzvah, like a talis, right? Like tzitzis, like an Esrog, those things, They you can't just throw them out with dirty diapers or fish, right? But what do? If it's wrapped on its own and then put together with it, you can discard it, right? Without a problem. Put it in a bag and then put it in with the rest of the stuff. Excuse me. Okay, so with that in mind, what is the status of a yarmulke? So that's where this all started for me. There is a sefer that's dedicated to Seamus issues. It's called the Sefer Ginzei HaKodesh. And in the 20th chapter, in note number 80, he quotes that it's obvious that you can throw away yarmulke when you're done using it. And in the footnotes, he says, I went to Chief Rabbi Kulitz, who said that there's absolutely nobody and no argument that a yarmulke needs to be put into Seamus. There's no basis for it. There's no argument. And then the author of the Sefer in the back quotes from Rav Chaim Kanievsky, Shalita, that when a person lights Shabbos candles, you know, like if it doesn't burn all the way down, or a person lights a Havdalah candle, and you know, you use the Havdalah candle until it goes all the way down, but you always left that little piece because if the Havdalah candle burns all the way down to the end, your fingers are going to get singed and you're going to have to call Yuri. Yuri, next year we'll put that out together also. Please don't use Havdalah candle all the way to the end, right? And so, what do you do with the leftover bit? The leftover bit of the Havdalah candle, the leftover bit of the thing? He says, maybe what a person should do, said Rav Chaim Kanievsky, is if you have the leftover bits of the Shabbos candle or the Havdalah candle, put that in a bag when you throw it away. Don't put it in directly with the dirty diaper, right? But a yarmulke, those things were used in performance of a mitzvah. Lighting Shabbos candles is a mitzvah, right? Making Havdalah is a mitzvah. Those things are elements that help you do a mitzvah. A yarmulke is not an element that helps you do a mitzvah. A yarmulke is, it's a garment, right? Do you put your shirt on and say, well, my shirt also helped me not walk around undressed. So now when you're done wearing a shirt, it's worn out. Now what do? You're going to take the shirt and put it into Geniza? So Rav Chaim Kanievsky says a yarmulke it has no problem. By the way, it also follows that there's another reason for a differentiation. Shabbos candles, can you take them into the bathroom? Lulav and Esrog, can you take it into the bathroom? Right? A yarmulke?
Yes.
We never thought about it. As I was considering the question, never thought about that one before. If it has a unique status of a mitzvah, huh?
It's also.
Oh, So this is very similar to the comment of the Shulchan Aruch in Siman Chaf Aleph, Sif Gimel, in regard to the tzitzis. Right? We also wear tzitzis, which of course the Mechaber says very clearly, it's mutter to wear into the bathroom. But the Mishnah Berurah comes along in Sif Katan Yud Dalet, and he says, that's only true for tzitzis that you wear all day. The tzitzis that I'm wearing under my shirt, right? These tzitzis, that I can wear in the bathroom. But if I wear a four-cornered garment that's sitting right over there, that I wear uniquely for tefillah, can I bring that into the bathroom? What's the difference between this and that? What's the difference?
It's for Shabbos.
This, the talit, is for tefillah, right? It's only one point in time that I wear it. In fact, the Mishnah Berurah comes and he adds another component.
But
he says,
you wear tzitzit on Shabbos, right?
I wear tzitzit on Shabbat. I wear it during the week.
So
I wear.
This is an extra.
So when I put on a talit in the morning or on Shabbat, that is worn, I wouldn't say just for Shabbos, it's for tefillah. Right? I wear it every morning. I wear it every morning. Right? But it's for tefillah. It's a unique garment I wear for tefillah. By the way, it follows that if I have a garment that I wear uniquely for tefillah, like I'll talk about garment in a second, but like a kittel, right? Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, you'll see many of the men wear a kittel. Mishnah Berurah writes very clearly over there in Siman Chaf Aleph Sif Katan Yud Dalet that he feels that when you go into the bathroom, Yom Kippur, you need a break, right? Rabbi, he just keeps talking and talking and talking, right? So when you're done, you need a break. There's no kiddush, right? So what do? So you use it as an excuse to go to the bathroom, right? You got to take off the kittel also when you go to the bathroom.
If you wear a kittel at the Seder,
right? You also have to take it off. Those things are worn for tefillah. So therefore, if you go to the bathroom at the Pesach Seder, so yes, he says, same, what's the comparison? The Pesach Seder, contrary to popular belief, it is worn. The reason why you wear the kittel is for the tefillah involved.
Not for the cheres.
It's not about the cheres. It's about the tefillah. It's the masa ha-korban and the challah that you say on top of it, right? As was discussed last year, 2 years ago in the Shabbos HaGadol drush, when we talked about the challah. But that's for another time. So the bottom line is, he says, even for a kittel, when you go into the bathroom, you should do it, right? And Reb Chaim Kanievsky says, you know what the source of this is? He says, there in Masechta Kala Rabasi, he identifies two different types of head coverings. One is called a kova, one is called a sudra. A kova, says the Kala Rabasi, has no kedusha, but a sudra does. What's the difference between a sudra and a kova? A kova was worn all the time. A sudra was only worn when a person was preparing for tefillah. So, here's where the fun starts. If I had a hat that I wore specifically for tefillah, right, then there would be more significance to a black hat. So, why? Because that would be something that I only wear for tefillah. And so, therefore, what would the significance be? I can wear my yarmulke into the bathroom. I cannot wear the hat into the bathroom.
What if you wear it from your house in the street to shul?
So that means that today, as I was conceptualizing this, when my menahel, Zichrono Livracha, used to say, when I went to high school, I didn't wear a hat and jacket except for davening, right? That's the way I was raised. So he used to try to get me because I was a troublemaker. I was the more outsider in the school system. So he used to say, you know, if you really join up with the rest of the class, you'll start wearing your hat and jacket everywhere. So I realized I was right. Right? All these other guys, they took their black hats. They're supposed to be part of the army of Hashem and all this other stuff. What do? They lowered the kedusha of the very... If I would have known this, boy, would I have gotten thrown out of yeshiva. Right? I didn't do that. So for me, to wear a hat into the bathroom would have been a problem. For the other guys, they didn't have a problem. You should just know, yes, your question about the gartel. So the Shavs Tshuvas Avne Yashve, which is a more modern sefer, Chelek Dalet or Chaim Simon Tazayan, he says a gartel is different, but for a different reason. He feels that a gartel is not something you wear for tefillah. He feels the gartel is part of the preparatory step. He called the cross Elokecha Yisrael. I don't get him 100%. So therefore, he says you can wear a gartel into the bathroom. I don't understand it 100%. It also should be pointed out that the Sefer Matta Ephraim in Shulchan Aruch, in Hilchos Yom HaKippurim, Simon Tav Resh Yud, Sif Yod Beis, Sif Katan Yod Beis says, if you wear a white yarmulke on Yom Kippur, all Yom Kippur long, you do not have to take it off, because it's not miyuchad for tefillah, it's miyuchad for Yom Kippur, and so therefore, a person could wear it. Bottom line is,
some places, that's the same thing.
Yeah, so bottom line is, the black attitude today is not a religious item anymore, right? So therefore, it's as I said to myself when I'm writing, guys, to be a little snarky, it's the baseball cap of the yeshiva league, right? Take that home. That's your quotable quote for the week. It's the baseball cap of the yeshiva league. This is other nafkaminas also. Sometimes you see that people place their hats in inappropriate places. If I only wore the hat for tefillah, then putting it on the same place that we put a sitter or whatever would not be a problem. But since I wear it all the time and everywhere, and so that seems to be the general avira over here, so putting it on the tables that we use for svarim and other things, I think that should present a certain degree of a problem. I'm not 100% sure why people aren't more particular. Putting it on a bima for sure is a problem. I know that Rabbi Schachter, there used to be a guy who used to daven in the yeshiva. He was an older fellow. I don't know how he was always in the yeshiva. So I remember he told me, go ask the Rebbe, you can't leave this up here. It was never my hat that was on the bima, so I don't know what the problem was. But he used to go crazy about it. Go ask Rosh Hashanah, you can't put it there. He's right. This fellow was always right, right? First of all, he was always right because he didn't leave you alone until you admitted that he was right. But beyond that, I happen to think he was right. That's the place where we lay. That's the place where the Sefer Torah goes. You can't just put a Dabar Chol there. And based on what we're saying, what's a hat? A Dabar Chol. We wear it as part of Hikon L'Kras Elokecha Yisrael. We put it on when we go stand in front of people who are chashuv. But that doesn't mean that you can't wear it into the bathroom. It's a Dabar Chol. Okay, I think I'm going to stop here. It's so funny, because sometimes you stop and you think for sure everyone's going to want you to do one topic, and it's not the one that we covered. But you know what? Od Chazon Lamoed, I may put it on for next week as well. Okay? Thank you all very much, and we'll continue.